Hello, this is Pat Lynch, and you are listening and watching the Career Pathways podcast brought to you from Kilt Studio, deep, deep in the basement of the Mabee Simpson Library at Lyon College. Joining me, as always, Mr. Showtime, Mr. Worldwide himself, Jason Nichols.
Producer Jason here.
Okay, and somewhere at the board making the magic happen is...
Producer Cheyenne.
Producer Cheyenne, yes, the new addition to the team. Also joining us today is Dr. Myron Faria. And Myron, you're an assistant professor of exercise science. Thank goodness. I think I got everybody's title wrong three straight times. So this is starting out well.
You can promote me if you want to.
You are. We are now officially the tenure committee. You've done exceptionally well. Congratulations. So, you know, we always start the show just wanting to learn more about you, kind of your journey from, you know, kind of where you started to, how'd you arrive here at Lyon College?
I will try to shorten the story. It's a very long one. Yeah. So, as you know, I'm from Brazil, originally from Brazil. I was born and raised in a very small city, like Batesville.
Right.
Not as a structure as Batesville, but a small city.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been passionate about sports. Always.
Right.
Always. So I knew as a kid that I would do something related to sport. I didn't know at the time, but I played sport all my life. Right. Cycling, soccer, volleyball, every kind of sport, street sport, gym sport, everything I was in, totally in. That kind of raised something inside me that I'm a very competitive person. Everything that I do, I try to do the best.
Mm-hmm.
Not harming the opponent, but I try to put all my effort, all my heart, my brain, everything I put in there as an effort. This kind of competitive thing in sport helped me a lot to develop myself, my career, and where I am. Of course, being a Brazilian, soccer is my passion. Right. I love soccer. Yeah. I like to study the tactics, the game, how to develop it. So I really, really like it. Back in high school, I played soccer in high school and in college in Brazil and at the university. And so I knew what I'm going to do, be a medical doctor or something, PT, OT, I didn't know. I know that something related to sport and healthcare, something like that, because math is not my strength, physics is not my strength. I know a little bit, but I have to do something that way. I discovered PT, so I did a PT school, so I'm a physical therapist, and after that, I kind of got a little bit disappointed with PT in sport in Brazil, but it's kind of my thing.
Right.
And I discovered, still with kind of sports, rehabilitation, I discovered that PTs, they can work with patients. So after the PT school, I did a residence training program, 2 years totally inside a hospital. 1 year dealing with patients, rehabilitation in the ICU, and 1 year in the clinic rehabilitation. Totally related to exercise, a different way of exercise, but it was really, really good to have it. After that, I did my master's in a medical program at a federal university in São Paulo.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I did my PhD. Everything related to exercise physiology and patients and how to do rehab and everything. And then my mind was blowing. I stopped it for a period with the research. I started teaching. I teach at a Brazilian university. And then I was a division chair in a different university in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
I was invited to be a research coordinator in a company.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, something was kind of blank in my mind. Sometimes yeah. something was missing. Right. It was the postdoc. Mm-hmm. And then I did the postdoc in Canada at McGill University in kinesiology, also related to exercise, physical education, and everything. And after all this path, while I was in Canada, I saw the Lyon College posting about the exercise mm-hmm. science job position. I applied to it. I flew to here, from Montreal to here. I did the person interview and everything, and here I am. Yeah. I think they like it.
Yeah, well, yeah, from Montreal to Batesville. Yeah. Great. So early, you know, in your academic career, then you saw yourself as far as that you really wanted to focus on like exercise science, specifically physical therapy. Is that kind of accurate or no?
Yeah. Because in Brazil is a little bit different the way that we have exercise science here. We don't have an exercise science program itself.
Yes.
After high school, you go directly to university in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
So you can choose medical school, physical education, PT, OT, whatever you want to do.
Right.
So I decided PT because PT is essential for sports.
Right.
Medical doctors, they deal kind of with the drug prescription, surgery, and everything. But PT, they mm-hmm. kind of totally focus on the rehab process with athletes. So that was my focus.
So you'd be like an athletic trainer or sports medicine?
Yeah. That was my goal. And mm-hmm. then I kind of shifted a little bit, but I went to the hospital. So dealing with healthcare, but also related to exercise. So exercise never left me, or mm-hmm. I never left exercise science as a topic.
The term exercise science, you know, we're in an academic institution, so we kind of understand what exercise science is. How would you define it to people listening to this podcast as far as what is exercise science?
Basically, everything related to health, you can connect with exercise science.
Okay.
It's a multidisciplinary course. So you're going to, if you are interested in exercise science, you're gonna see topics related to healthcare
mm-hmm.
and also to fitness, exercise, and how your body works. So you have to do A&P. You have to know the anatomical terms,
mm-hmm.
anatomy, and then you're going to learn the physiology, how your body works.
Right.
And then you're going to put all the puzzle together, all the pieces together in exercise physiology, learning how everything works. But also you need a basic like chemistry, because physiology mm-hmm. needs chemistry, a very specific detail. Respiratory physiology needs physics,
right?
Because we are dealing with tubes, resistance, and everything. So nothing is kind of why I'm studying physics, why I'm studying chemistry. In exercise science, you have to know the basics of things to know how your body works. There's no way for us to get rid of it. So it's a multidisciplinary mm-hmm. topic.
So that's like where the liberal arts comes into it then, right? Like, you got to be well-rounded in every piece kind of around the book when it comes to physical science.
Yeah, that fits perfectly. If you know a little bit of chemistry, a little bit of physics, math, people, they don't. Sometimes you don't like math. You're going to get rid of math. Okay, so I'm going to exercise science. You need to know math because you're going to calculate things. How am I going to prescribe your exercise if I don't know math? So it fits perfectly the liberal arts, yeah.
With the goal is healing, is that or kind of what would be the goal? Of, you know, as a physical therapist, you meet with a patient, is it inaccurate as far as healing or rehabilitation or what do you try to accomplish
in exercise science?
Yes,
you mean
okay. yes.
exercise science opens a lot of doors
mm-hmm.
for you. You can be an AT athletic trainer. You can be athletic director.
Right.
You can be PT, OT, medical doctor if you want. And if you want to be a coach, exercise science also will help you, because if you are a coach and if you want to discuss your athlete with the medical doctor, the injury, the process right. of rehabilitation, you are able to. So the exercise science will kind of give you an open mind and a view of everything, the entire situation. Yeah. Healing and rehabilitation, I think it's more focused on PT and AT.
Okay. AT being athletic trainer?
Athletic trainer, yeah. Yes. But being an exercise science major, you will be able to pursue AT mm-hmm. school and PT school. So yeah. rehabilitation and healing, more to that.
Yeah.
Exercise science, you have the whole picture of everything.
So mm-hmm. with exercise science, because I'm kind of coming from humanities perspective here, I'm an English major. So like we do a lot of like papers and journals and stuff like that. And I know there's medical journals and stuff. Mm-hmm. Does exercise science kind of fall a lot into that kind of like journals, medical, like you can do a lot of that stuff with the exercise science and doctorate?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That definitely, yeah. That's one of our things here that put us in a different position, because we have the teaching, we have the hands-on, we have the labs for students to put that literally the hands-on practice and how to do this stuff. And me as a PT, I can give them some perspective of what they're going to face in the future. So I can give them the real case scenario. Oh, you are an athlete, you're going to face this, you're going to have this and that. And one more thing is the research that you were talking about, the papers. Research is the base of every healthcare, everyone. If you don't read and if you don't take your care based on science, you are doing nothing.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, we have that here too.
We've talked a lot about like rehabilitation and healing. Does exercise science ever get in involved with prevention and ways to, you know, so it would be so much easier if someone did not get injured.
For sure.
So how does it help in that area?
I'm going to get back the questions for you. You were a tennis player, right?
Yes.
How do you prevent?
Try to.
How do you prevent yourself of not having an injury?
Stretching is the primary one. Just knowing my limits is another one. And then, you know, it's just matter of flexibility. Friday, I was talking with Nancy Love, Kent Nadler's wife, and she teaches a yoga class on Thursday. This past week, she had the entire basketball team taking yoga. Why? You know, flexibility, you know, strength and conditioning. So, yes, all those things kind of will help them play better in the court. Hopefully, you know, it'll help me do better in tennis.
But how do you know how much weight do you have to lift to strengthen your muscle? How much do you have to stretch your muscle to prevent an injury? This is the kind of stuff.
And that mine is imprecise. I'm sure if I had a trainer, they would know the science and
yes.
they could build a way. Okay, here's week one to week 10.
That's the point.
Okay.
That's the point.
Yeah.
People usually think that, okay, I'm going to do a sport. I have to stretch myself. I have to strengthen my muscles. But how?
Mm-hmm.
How often?
Right.
How's the weight that you have to put in there? So this is the basic of the things that we teach here. You have to know, okay, the anatomy for recognize which muscle. We are talking about tennis, for example.
Right.
And how we're going to develop the prevention.
Right.
So we talk about this in classes too. So it's really funny to see these students developing their ability to check, hey, I'm an athlete and I saw this weekend an injury that happened like this, and this. Everything happened the way that you taught us in the class. So
now I'm able to
check this, and that. So it's really, really, really funny.
And with like yoga too, because my golf coach when I was in high school, he's like a big yoga fiend. His thing was like, yoga is like you. If you don't do anything else, do yoga the entire time for golf, especially for golf and stuff for tennis. You know, because that's like a lot of that upper body rotation stuff. Would you say that yoga is probably one of the most important things in like exercise that a lot of people kind of overlook, especially in sports that like you wouldn't think would need it?
I wouldn't say the most important thing,
mm-hmm.
but I think yoga helps you not only with the body, but with your mind. You have to concentrate, you have to focus, you clear your mind when you're doing yoga. So it's not only related to physical body, but with mental health. I think it works in the both directions. I think the prevention is important. I think the regular medicine is important, and alternatives is also, they play nowadays an important role with that. Yeah, definitely. I would recommend it.
Our exercise science major has two tracks, so health professions and health and wellness. Can you kind of explain what the design for the two tracks and kind of where those point students in terms of future careers?
Yes, the health professions basically prepare you to more after college, if you want to pursue health mm-hmm. professions like PT, OT, medical right. doctor, and everything. So everything related to healthcare, you can follow the health mm-hmm. professions track. And the fitness and assessment is more related to how to prescribe the exercise, how to work out at the gym, okay. how to take care of the body. It's more physical. But our two tracks, they are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very similar. We right. have a few courses that difference. For example, the health professions, you have a little bit of physics because you need to know the physics to understand the body and everything. And the fitness and wellness, you have more psychology
right.
classes going to that direction. They are really, really close.
You know, coming from career services perspective, there student wants to become a physical therapist. What after Lion, or they're in their senior years, they come to me and they ask, okay, I that's what I want to do. Do what do they need to do to be in order to go to, I guess, graduate school or
PT school. It's the first in the United States. We have like different schools having different prerequisites,
mm-hmm.
but the most common prereq, it's having like an exercise science course as a prereq.
Right.
It could be, you can do bio, but exercise science fits better PT schools.
Mm-hmm.
Usually you have to have A&P 1 and 2.
And A&P is
anatomy and physiology.
Got it. Okay.
You have to know kinesiology. It's mm-hmm. how your body moves, the angles, right. how you spin your body, how you do flexion and extension, how you do a movement, basically. The exercise physiology is very important
right.
to you if you want to do a PT. Basically, mm-hmm. exercise science here in Lyon covers, I think, more than 90% of the PT, what they require.
Right.
Depending where you want to go, you have to do an extra class, but
right.
some PT schools, all courses that we offer here, they are covering the PT prereq.
And are there entrance exams?
After completing PT school, yeah, there's a national exam.
Okay.
To get accredited.
Correct. Okay.
But not to get into the PT
school. Yeah, so it's not like a medical school or law school or graduate school where you would take kind of a standardized, you know, exam to be accepted. So it's so students are getting accepted based on grade point.
Yep.
Well, what other criteria?
Grade point, the prereqs.
Prereqs, okay.
Research, if you did some research
okay.
in college, mm-hmm. you put you in a different standard position
right.
to be accepted in a grad school. I think that's it.
Job shadow hours, because I know I've been involved.
Oh, PT assistant. Yeah,
yes.
They require some internships
right.
as a PT assistant.
So that's something that a student, I know we have a great program with White River, they're very good about, you know, kind of allowing students to job shadow. So mm-hmm. that could help them in that yes. area.
Yeah, definitely.
Are you doing any research presently?
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Last year, I did one research with mm-hmm. migraines.
Yeah.
We are trying to double check how migraines affect your body in the meantime that you were doing exercise.
Right.
It was really interesting. But the research that we are doing now, and I have, I think, 4 undergrad students helping me,
mm-hmm.
it's about concussions. I know that concussions right. are a very important topic, and
right.
we have sports here that we have consistent head impacts.
Yeah.
So basically, we have the gold standard equipment here in Lyon to do that research. We just got a grant for isokinetic dynamometer. It's a machine that we perform strength tests.
Mm-hmm.
So we are using that machine to check the quads strength, your quadriceps strength. So this is kind of the exercise that the athlete, he or she, is doing.
Right.
And we have 2 equipments to measure the heart and the brain. So we put a lot of stickers on the chest to check the heart and the brain. And 2 extra stickers, that one goes to the forehead and one goes to the leg.
Right.
This equipment, we are able to check the blood flow in the tissue.
Mm-hmm.
So how much blood is going to that part of the body. So we have the complete system to check the brain, the heart, the body, and the blood flow going there. Our idea is, it's already proven that concussion is bad,
yeah.
right? It's really bad. We can see the CDE disease.
Right.
So we have basically 3 groups in our research, if you allow me to explain a little bit more.
Please, please.
We have the concussion group that should be the worst group. Compared to how much blood going to the head and the leg
mm-hmm.
for doing the exercise. If your brain's not working properly, the minor regulation will be compromised.
Right.
So you can have higher or lower blood going to your tissue.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the control group. The control group, they are the athletes that never had concussion in history.
Right.
So we have totally opposite. And we have a great thing here happening. That's our 3rd group. Our 3rd group, they are composed by athletes that they perform a sport with consistent head impacts, but they never had a concussion before.
Right.
So we have the opposite, concussion,
mm-hmm.
control, healthy, never had any concussion, and exactly in the middle, the consistent head impact with no concussion.
Right.
They're going to be closer to the concussion or mm-hmm. to the normal athletes.
Right.
I don't know. The question that relies on is consistent head impacts affecting the students
mm-hmm.
in a way that we can avoid future problems? I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe with simple tests, we can measure that and maybe help the future athletes avoiding like future problems.
Mm-hmm.
We can see a lot of problems with concussions. I don't know if you saw it, the MMA fighters, they are suing the UFC because they are having CDE problems.
Yeah.
And basically they don't have concussions very often, but they have the head impacts
yeah.
very often.
Well, taking fist against and feet against your head, gosh, and I'm getting a concussion. Who'd yeah. have thought? You know,
but like yeah. with CTE, I wanted to ask because like we always hear about people, you know, getting CTE, but you always hear about a lot of people like in the NFL who they're like, oh, I think I have CTE, or and they don't know, and it's not until they die that you can 100% know that somebody yeah. has CTE. Why yeah. is that?
There's a movie that tells the story about a medical doctor that discovered CTE. I think it's with Will Smith or
yes.
Cuba Gooding Jr.
Or Will Smith.
Will Smith.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a very interesting because in the past, we didn't know about that.
Mm-hmm.
So the athlete had to die and then to study the brain. They discovered that it's similar with Alzheimer's. You have a protein deposit in the brain that basically destroy your brain and neuron connections. Nowadays, we know some symptoms that's kind of irritability, mm-hmm. bad humor, suicidal thoughts, lack of memory. Mm-hmm. Basically, these signs tells you that you have it. But you don't know until you have it. Yeah. That's the problem. And you don't need to have concussion to develop CTE.
Yeah.
Even if you have consistent head impact, even mild ones, you can develop it. That's our main concern. And that's why I'm doing the research here. If I can detect very, very early, this thing should mm-hmm. be helpful.
Yeah, and that's what was happening with the MMA players, right? Is they're not getting like concussions too much, but they're starting to see these symptoms, right? And that's why they're suing?
Yeah, yeah. Of course, some of them, they had concussions in the past. Mm-hmm. Some of them, they are having concussions. But the great part of them, they didn't have any concussion. Yeah. It's just the head impact, the problem.
How has exercise science evolved over the years? I imagine, you know, like a lot of science, if you look back 20, you know, because you've studied, you know, the whole discipline. And 20, 30 years ago, I imagine what was conventional wisdom then is now been debunked or revised. I mean, how has the whole field of exercise science changed or improved or evolved?
As a health profession, I'm going to put exercise science in health because mm-hmm. we deal with health.
Yeah.
It's in a constant changing
right.
because the through today is a lie tomorrow. So research and everything, we kind of discover new stuff every single day. So we have to keep changing the courses, the material, everything. We never stop studying. If you want to be an exercise science person, you have to keep reading at least the rest of your life because it's you have to be updated with mm-hmm. the stuff. So yes, there was a lot of changing in the past, and now we have, I think, a very good update curriculum here.
Mm-hmm.
Related to exercise science, but yeah, we are in a constant changing every time.
I teaching undergraduate students, kind of what's that experience like, and how do you get the Lion students kind of engaged and involved? Because I think exercise science is, we have a large number of student athletes here on campus, and I think that also is probably why exercise science is one of the more popular majors. So they like sports, but that isn't exercise science. So how do you get them to kind of all of a sudden really embrace it the way that you did when you were a young man?
I like to give them examples, real examples mm-hmm. in life. So based it on that, I really like sports, and I watch every single sport.
Yeah.
So I know what is happening. Oh, you're talking about Usain Bolt. Oh, yeah, I saw that. We are talking about football. Yeah, yeah, I saw that injury.
Right.
Oh, baseball. Yeah, I saw. LA is in the World Cup now, probably, I hope, with Yankees. And, yeah, I watch sports.
Mm-hmm.
So I know, like, yesterday, what happened yesterday, kind of an injury in a sport. And because I was an athlete and I'm teaching athletes, giving them real case examples
right.
capture their attention. And because they are athletes, they pay more attention in the class because they want to know what's happening.
Right.
If I do this, what's the probability of me getting injured? What can I do to avoid an injury? If a colleague of my colleague got injured in the field, what can I do to help?
Right.
So I try to put a lot of videos, pictures, and real case scenarios to them in class, to them to see and realize what is going on in real life, how to react, how to do this.
Yeah.
Step one, step two, you have to follow the steps. You're going to be succeeding that. So capturing the students' attention is really is really high because they are undergrad. They are in the transition between high school and college. Mm-hmm. There are differences. And I think that giving them the responsibility mm-hmm. and giving real examples in life,
yeah.
it is really good. And seeing their eyes kind of shining
yes.
with the things, it's good because sometimes they tell me, oh, I had an injury in high school when I was playing that, then that happened with my arm. You explain it. Now I know what happened. Now I know why I cannot, like, do a kind of movement. So it's really, really, yeah, really good.
And I imagine teaching exercise science, it's not lecture and PowerPoint. I mean, how or is it? Or how else do you effectively teach it to students?
I use a lot of PowerPoints
okay.
because I like to put pictures mm-hmm. in there for students because they need to look what's happening.
Right.
And I like to put videos.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, first aid. I'm teaching first aid.
Right.
They need to know the mechanism of injury. The mechanism of injury is how you got the injury.
Right.
And just telling them you have to look this, this, and this, or you have to look the foot position, and then you have to look the body position. You have to look the external force. It's boring. I'm being honest. So what I like to do is put a video
right.
with an injury. That's why I'm very updated.
Right.
So sometimes I put an injury that happened in the week before, and they saw that game, that injury happened, right. but they don't know how and which kind of structure could be injuring that, like muscle, bone, mm-hmm. ligament. And I put the video, and I ask them, what happened? Tell me the mechanism of injury. Now you are an exercise science major.
Right.
You need to write a report to me. I'm the medical doctor. Write a report.
Mm-hmm.
So they know the medical terms. They know the injury. So they need right. to write the mechanism of injury. So this kind of real situation puts them in a very good position. And now they realizing, oh, I'm really doing this. This is for real. And it's comforting.
And you also have a lab, yes? And what kind of study is done in our lab?
We have anatomy and physiology 1, anatomy and physiology 2, exercise physiology. I think I'm forgetting one. But for sure, these three, we have labs
right.
with it. We have some field exercises that we can do, some tests
right.
like stretching, running, jumping. More than using only the equipment that we have some field tests that we can put the students on, hands-on on all
right.
of those. The lab that we have, it's here also in the library mm-hmm. building. It's
right here next, on the yeah, back. Right yeah. behind you, yeah.
It's the next door. We have very good equipment. We are very well prepared with
structure. Yeah, I remember it was before you came that they did like a total fitness exam. It was depressing, wasn't it? it was like, oh God. But I, you know, it just really pointed out, okay, all the things that need as far as the, you know, low level of flex, there was a way to measure flexibility,
mm-hmm.
you know, by, you know, yeah. how far you could reach. And it was like, okay. And then, you know, just, you know, how long you could run on the treadmill, you know, and you had all your diodes and all that
yeah, yeah.
stuff on you, and yeah, it was a, you know, so it was very revealing.
Yeah, it's kind of a breaking thing that we are facing with artificial intelligence and with phone apps.
Mm-hmm.
Students, they have everything in their phones. So basically, for example, I want to calculate your VO2 max.
Right.
It's your body ability to capture the oxygen mm-hmm. and use as an energy source. I can do that with my phone. I can put your age, height, weight, and measure how you walk. I have the number. But I like to teach the students, okay, you have this. You can use this. It's technology. There's no way for us to avoid students using technology.
Mm-hmm.
But always a but. They need to know why they are doing that.
Right.
The reason and why we are putting like the age or the high or weight in there. If they know why we are doing this stuff, they can use every single app, equipment, artificial intelligence, because they know the very basic. And even, for example, the internet fades away, mm-hmm. they know how to do it in paper.
Right.
If I'm teaching only, oh, hey, okay, you have an app, just put your data here, you'll find, you have the number. They don't know the reason why they are doing that.
Yeah.
So I like to teach like the old school, mm-hmm. why we are doing that. And then we got the apps, the technology to help them. So knowing the basic, they are good to go. And if everything happened, they know how to keep moving forward.
Yeah. Does a diet and nutrition ever play a part in terms of any the study of exercise science?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Diet, in what way?
Diet is everything. For example, people used to think that calorie is only a calorie.
Okay.
But it's not. You can have like a chocolate bar right now and you can eat a salad. Both have calories. Right. They have calories. They can have the same amount of calories. It's just an mm-hmm. arbitrary number example. You can eat like a Twix chocolate bar.
Sure.
A very small one. And you can have a big plate of salad. They have the same calorie. I'm just guessing. I'm right. not saying that is it. But the amount of insulin that the chocolate will release in your body is much higher than the salad. That's the main thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can eat exactly the same calorie with different plates, different meals, but yeah. how much insulin is released, that's the important thing that you have to realize. And nutrition is important because of that.
Okay.
Another thing, I'm sorry to interrupt yeah. you. If you're eating carbs, you're going to release insulin faster. So you're going to be starving faster.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're eating meat, for example, you can eat veggie meat. I'm not talking about being vegetarian or not. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. If you're eating proteins, you release lower amount of insulin
right.
and it takes longer to be processed. And if you're eating fat, you release lower amount of insulin that takes longer for you to starving again. Mm-hmm. So nutrition is really important. Yeah. It's a very interesting topic. In the past, ag was bad. Nowadays, ag is good.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Bacon was kind of a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now bacon is good.
I was just going to...
There is a God.
Okay. I was just gonna ask about that, about, because we, like, if you ever look at like old food pyramids,
right.
and like we used to learn about those in facts, and you have like the bottom where you need all of the stuff, and at the top yeah. it's the stuff like chocolate bars, stuff mm-hmm. like that. But at the bottom, what a lot of people started to notice, and this is like our modern thinking, right. is it would be like 6 to 12, you know, cups of carbs or like right. breads, you know, which are loaded with carbs.
I will interrupt you. Do you know when that happened?
No.
Okay. That's a bad news.
Okay.
United States is the worst place about obesity. Mm-hmm. It's well recognized, right. right?
We're number one.
You're number one.
We're always number one.
We're always
and the numbers do skyrocket.
Yes.
That happens in the kind of mid of 70s.
Mm-hmm. I was going to probably guess that if I had to guess.
Yeah, in the mid 70s. In the mid 70s, American Heart Association, Diabetes Association, they release a lot of things, say, hey, we are having a lot of heart attacks. Heart attacks becoming a big problem. So probably is related to your diet.
Mm-hmm.
People used to eat a lot of fat things and everything. So they kind of related the heart attacks with the fat. And they told United States people, okay, you have to switch your diet to carbs. Don't eat less fat, eat more carbs and everything. The problem was, if you look the graph, obesity graph in the United States, you're going to see that almost 40% were overweight, like BMI a little bit higher than 25. Literally 1% were severe obese. kind of 10% were obese. After 70s, you decrease the number of overweight, but the number of obese and super obese skyrocket. Mm-hmm. And the people, the associations, diabetes, American Heart Association, every association, they kind of keep saying the carbs are good, the carb diet is it good, and blah, blah, blah. There was one paper, a guy published in the New England Journal of Medicine. New England is the most reliable journal in healthcare. I don't know if you know about the impact. The higher is the impact, the higher is the journal. New England reached out like more than 100 points. So it's really, really hard to publish. So everyone that reads New England trusts them. Mm-hmm. The problem was a guy that published the paper in New England saying that the carbs, eat more carbs and blah, blah, blah. In 2016, like 40 years later, they discovered that that guy was sponsored.
Yeah, I was just going to talk about that. I wasn't trying to get conspiracy theory, but like,
no, it is
that,
true
that like the companies were like,
what, like with the cereal companies?
He was sponsored by sugar companies.
Yeah. Love it, man.
Yeah. I was like, I didn't want to be, I didn't want to be the schizo with the conspiracy theory.
That's true. And
right. For the record,
the problem is the lie. I will put lie. Mm-hmm. As I said, today I'm telling you exercise is good, but tomorrow someone could rise up, okay, I have new evidence that exercise is not good. That's not going to happen, but it's just an example. So the lie today could be the truth tomorrow or vice versa. But you don't want to tell us lies just because science is an evolution. But once you know the thing that is happening and it is bad, it's just because you are being sponsored, that's a lie. So they lied to us saying that carbs, they were good. And it's not. And one more thing. Do you know when tobacco started to be blocked from society, like advertising and a lot of people saying, okay, tobacco is bad, it causes this, this, and this?
In the late 90s.
No, I thought 70s was when they you couldn't advertise on TV was when it hit in the 70s.
Like 80s, okay, late 80s. Yeah. So tobacco industry, they realized that, okay, they will block us because the smoke now is bad. They knew that since the beginning. Mm-hmm. Okay. What did they do? Because, okay, it's money. Tobacco industry, they do a lot of money, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm trying to shut your tobacco company down, Patrick, mm-hmm. what should you do? You're going to try to survive and making more and more money. What did they do?
Oh, gosh. Simple thing was, I know tobacco, they, like, say here in the U.S., they just found other markets. You know, Asia became very popular. That was a big thing. I guess vaping is another one where they just kind of changed the script, and now all of a sudden you have a safe...
Vaping is kind of new thing. Yeah.
I think my guess is that they started to sponsor anti-tobacco stuff, like these kind of... No?
No.
I don't know.
They start buying food companies.
Mm.
Right. Oh, right.
And pharma industries. So now tobacco companies.
Now we're going to conspiracy. Now we're going conspiracy. Yes,
let's do it.
I like this. They start buying food companies.
Yes. Okay. So RJR bought Nabisco. Philip Morris bought General Foods.
Yeah.
Okay. You know that. I'm with you. Oh, yeah. I'm with you. You know that.
So they start buying food companies.
Yeah.
What is the most addicted thing in food?
Probably the sugar.
Right? Sugar.
Yeah.
So they start putting sugar in every single thing. Syrup, corn syrup, everything.
Yes.
So we are addicted. I am addicted. I love pasta. I love carbs. So,
well, it's like if I remember trying the Whole 30 program. I'm familiar with it, Myron, but... Basically, it's a simple way of eating where you just, you like if you go to a grocery store, you'd only eat everything in the perimeter and you would avoid everything inside, you know, all the aisles. And it's, yeah, you want a Campbell's tomato soup. Okay, I'll do that. Sugar. Oh, darn. You know, pasta sauce. Oh, that I'll have that sugar. It was the first time I saw that it is literally yogurt, sugar. I mean, it was like everything that you would consider like semi-processed or I guess heavily processed foods all had it.
Yeah, and sugar. So it's sugar. And after tobacco companies start buying the food company, they start buying and creating pharma industry and drugs, because now sugar is creating diabetes.
Right.
And to fight diabetes, you need to take medication. Mm-hmm. And you need to develop a drug to fight that. So tobacco companies start doing, okay, let's put sugar. People will get addicted to it. That's conspiracy. And then now I will develop a drug to fight against that.
Instead of just like, you know, from the beginning, not getting people, like, I can't remember who said it. I had a class. It might have actually been a philosophy when I was in Minnesota, but they basically were saying, like, you know, it's easier to get people addicted to a product and sell them the cure to that product rather than sell them, you know, the beginning of it to prevent it. So instead of selling the prevention, you sell the cure.
Yeah,
you
know? The prevention is the hardest thing. One more thing. I lived in Canada for 1 year and a half, probably. And a very good thing that I saw there, it was like, I'm going to buy a chocolate bar.
Mm-hmm.
The tax in the chocolate bar was kind of going to the roof.
Yeah.
But if I decided to buy a lettuce or tomato or something, no tax.
Yeah.
So they are trying to prevent things. Yeah. That's one way. One question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Who said, okay, I will change the question. What is the most important meal of the day?
Breakfast.
Who said that?
Probably the cereal companies. Somebody who makes breakfast stuff.
No, okay, so you're going to that's the conventional thinking because that's what everybody has said. So what is the most important meal of
the day? There is no most important meal.
Oh.
Whoa.
No, whoa.
People usually think the breakfast is the most important meal.
Right.
Right? Who said that? Kellogg's.
Cereal.
Cereal. Is there any scientific proof of that?
It was always like the start your metabolism thing, but you can kind of do that at end.
Okay, that's a great point. Start your metabolism. We spend like fasting hours when we are sleeping. Mm-hmm. So we need to have something to keep that doing. But who said that we need to start with cereal with a lot of sugar? So that's the thing. And Kellogg's start sponsoring American Heart Association, Diabetes Association, and everything.
I love it, yeah.
So the problem is not you can have sugar once you have it like under control. But if you keep eating sugar, 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 like breakfast, lunch, dessert, and everything, it's bad. Everything in excess is bad. The problem was the tobacco companies start buying the food company. The food companies start sponsoring the health associations like the American Heart Association, the Diabetes Association, the Blood Pressure Association, and everything. That's kind of scares me.
And it comes back to marketing over here, Mr. Marketing Guy, where, you know, these companies, they go, all right, well, what's good about our products? And it's with like Cheerios and Kellogg's. Cholesterol. Oh, you know, it's so good. It lowers your cholesterol. Let's put that on everything and make it like it's the biggest, most important thing. But
then
you have
proven
like,
Cheerios lowers cholesterol.
Yes,
right?
Sure, maybe. But then, you know, you also have how many grams of sugar in that cereal too, and all that stuff.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Of course, if eating less fat, you're going to decrease your cholesterol, but you're going to release more insulin. And the insulin is the metabolism problem. With insulin, you activated a thing called TOR, T-O-R. TOR is made to build or destroy your cells. Every time that you have insulin release, you are activating the Thor mechanism. And the Thor mechanism start building and building things, creating cells and everything. So if you have like a cell with a problem, you're going to incentivate that to growth. If it's a cancer cell, you're going to give them food to grow. When you don't eat a lot of sugar off, or if you reduce your insulin release, you are deactivating the Thor.
Right.
And now the Thor is made to repair your cells. So every cell that you repair, you reduce the chance to develop cancer, mm-hmm. to develop Alzheimer's. You put your metabolism in the correct path.
Yeah.
But if you don't have your metabolism under control, you don't have nothing under control, and then the bad things can happen.
Kind of changing gears.
One second. What is the best meal that we have to eat? I think you asked me.
Yes.
I don't have the answer.
Yes.
It could be breakfast. Yes. Could be lunch. Yes. I think it also depends on what you're eating.
Yeah.
I think it depends.
One thing we have is an aging population.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, you know, people live longer, and what I've been reading and seeing are a lot of knee replacements, hip replacements. How do you prepare your exercise science students for, that aging population? That a lot of that is rehabilitation. You know, with the once, especially the older they are, the harder it is to kind of be able to recover in some capacity.
Two things. One is the prevention,
yep.
that we talked about. So I teach them, okay, when you get older, you're going to lose muscle mass.
Right.
You're going to lose bone mass. How do you prevent losing muscle mass? Working out.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you don't like, you have to go to the gym at least to have weightlifting. You don't need to be Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Right.
But you need to weight lifting a little bit to avoid that. If you avoid that, probably you will not have osteoporosis.
Right.
Because once you have muscle contraction, you're also protecting your bone. If you are protecting your muscle and bone, the chance for you to fall and break a bone is lower.
Right.
If you don't fall and if you don't break a bone, you don't need the hip replacement. You don't need the knee replacement. You don't need clavicle surgery, shoulder surgery, yeah. whatever. So this is the prevention. But some people, they don't choose that.
Right.
You have ill people, and then you have to rehab them. I kind of prepare the exercise science to deal with that.
Right.
But the real rehabilitation, you need to go to PT schools, OT schools, medical doctor schools. So I introduce the topic to them. Okay, you might see a hip replacement. You have to do this, this, and this. And to do a hip replacement, you need to know the range of motion.
Right.
Range of motion is basically the angle that your joint moves.
Mm-hmm.
So I teach that in kinesiology. So the very basic, they know. So once they need to rehabilitate someone or they are going to PT school, for example, they know the basics. So now they will learn the rehab tools and how to do that.
Oh, wonderful.
I was just going to say, this is kind of a little bit more of a change of subject a little bit.
He wants to get back to conspiracy.
No. Actually,
let's get back to that.
No, I want to kind of actually get back to like sports in okay. particular. So I've been seeing a lot of people talk about like Patrick Mahomes and those guys and how they kind of have like a dad bod, right? They're kind of a little more tubby than what we would assume an athlete, especially a football player, would be. And you
You're
don't
not looking
maybe
at me when you say that.
And maybe you don't like have like a full answer to this, but why is it that like now all of a sudden we're kind of seeing like a lot of football players in particular kind of shift away from being like these super, super athletes and kind of more to like a more like dad bod style where it's not like, instead of like being really jacked, they're kind of more like, lean. Is that just because of the position they play or is that starting to become a trend? Or
I don't know. We can compare football with rugby.
Okay.
Do you know rugby?
Yeah.
So rugby players, they don't use any protection. That's bad. But if you look their body, they are much more stronger and fitness compared to football. Okay, the sport is totally different. The exercise that they need to do, the task is totally different. But they are not kind of fat. They are very strong. And I'm going to tell you something that you're not going to like. Professional sport is not good to your body.
Right.
It's not. People say the exercise is good to your body. Yes, it is. But if you are overloading your body in a such a way for years and years, you will suffer. You will pay the price. Mm-hmm. Of course, being sedentary is bad.
Mm-hmm.
Being a pro athlete to the body is bad because you are literally destroying your body. Look like Simone Biles, knee, wrist. Probably she has a wrist of 80. Yeah. 80 years old person
landing, yeah.
For landing, an ankle like a 60 or 70 years old yeah. person because a lot of overloading. So being a pro, you will pay a price.
Because yeah. I was thinking of like Tiger Woods, you know how like throughout the, you know, late 90s, 2000s, you know, he's like, every day I stay until midnight and I hit 1,000 balls, you know, stuff like that. And that's kind of going back to that like pro yeah. athlete thing is like, well, eventually by the time you hit 40, your body's going to be like it's 80. And they're like, no, it's not. He's going to, you know, he's working out. It's good for him. And now look at him. He's had 3 knees. He has 5 plates in his back. I mean, car accident didn't help, but, you yeah. know, like
yeah.
that's what happens, you know.
Are you an athlete?
Not really anymore. I was in high school.
Oh, he's a, you're a golfer.
You were
a golfer. Yeah. I was a golfer.
You were. Okay. Let's assume that you have an injury
mm-hmm.
on the back, lower back, and you were playing the world tournament. You're going to be the GOAT, but you were injured. And you're going to ask me as your medical doctor or PT, you're going to say to me, do everything that you have to.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I need to put like an equipment to heal your injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to tell you or ask you, hey, this is going to hurt a little bit. If it's hurting too much, you have to tell me, and then we're going to stop. For you to get rehab faster, you're never going to tell me when it's hurting.
Yeah, you just push it.
Yeah. Just push it. So it's hard.
And it's also like the thing of like, for example, if you're like in the Super Bowl, right? It's like, and you get injured in the first quarter, it's like, this is a Super Bowl. I'm playing 3 more quarters.
And yeah. Then, you
know,
yeah.
That's when horse tranquilizer in the yeah. foot or whatever, you know,
yeah.
whatever you got to
so,
do.
Being a pro is not good to the body.
Well, good. Well, I'm going to be feeling a whole lot better about my dad bod now and having to avoid professional sports. Mm-hmm. But, well, Myron, thank you so much for this has been a great interview.
That's my pleasure.
It was really good, and then we got into conspiracy theories, and it got even better.
Yeah. For sure, yeah.
I have a lot of things to tell about. There's a book that was released recently, I think in June or July. It's from a medical doctor from L.A.
Mm-hmm.
The book is The Lies That I Thought in Med School.
Okay.
So, yeah. That, the conspiracy about yes. that, everything is in there. And the good thing in the book is everything that you're reading, you have a reference, a scientific reference
right.
in there. So when I was reading it, literally, I ate that book in literally 2 days.
Yeah.
I read it like the entire book. It was so good to know the things.
Mm-hmm.
Not yeah. about the physiology and the stuff, but the backgrounds like, American Heart Association was sponsored by this. That's why they told you to do this, this, and this. Yeah. But the truth, it's not like that.
Well, now you open that door. We got to go right back in, right, Jason?
It's actually funny. I feel somewhat responsible for the obesity problem in the United States because little known fact that a lot of people don't know is my quad great grandfather was one of the original Kellogg brothers.
Oh,
there you go.
So the two guys who founded Kellogg's was my one of the can't remember which one it was, but he's my grandfather. And like, not like third removed grandfather. Yeah, yeah. Like, I'm talking my great great grandmother was his daughter. And she was like, gave up the name because she's like, I don't like you. And I'm going to marry this Okert guy. And he was like, if you do that, we will never, ever, you know, you will never be a part of this family. And she said, all right, I don't want to be a part of it. And she moved the Okerts, who then moved to the Nichols.
Oh, man. Oh,
that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I'll share something with you that years ago, I did a market research study it was a consultancy firm, and our client was Cargill. It was two clients, Cargill and Coca-Cola. And they wanted us to study high fructose corn syrup. Okay, now you know where I'm going.
Yeah.
And they were, you know, Coke at the, what they were seeing is classic Coke, you know, just 150 calories for an 8 ounce can is, you know, loaded with high fructose corn syrup. And every year they could count on 2-3% decline in sales. And so they wanted us to study, is it due to people concerned with high fructose corn syrup leading to obesity? And so then, you know, we went and researched it. Turned out that, yeah, high fructose corn syrup had a terrible reputation, okay? But the real reason for the classic Coke going down the way it was more so with an aging population avoiding calories, and they just shifted to Diet Coke or Coke Zero, okay? And that was, and so... Cargill, you know, kind of took that information and said, okay, now, you know, we'll just, you know, we'll plan. They shut down a plant, you know, because it was things that they could do to rationalize production. But we never really got to the, you know, about the high fructose corn syrup, because we were going to do a project if there's a way we could rename it or make it friendly or try to do something.
The corn syrup is the worst.
Yeah, tell me about that. Because, yeah, I kind of knew it wasn't. You know.
It's the worst.
Yeah.
It's the worst because release, like, tons of insulin in your body.
Yeah.
It's the worst because of that. It's because of the insulin release, and you have a peak of glucose in your blood. Mm-hmm. That's the main problem related to corn syrup. Probably you saw that they are advertising. Coca-Cola is advertising that in Mexico.
Yeah.
Their Coca-Cola is made pure
sugar.
With
yeah.
pure sugar coming from sugar cane.
Yes.
Is that better?
No.
But the thing is
that's
it's
and
not.
We went through there and they showed us that, you know, if pure sugar versus high fructose corn syrup, the body absorbs it basically the same way.
Yeah. So what's the difference?
I think
it's just advertising.
Yeah.
I think Coke is like, at this point, though, it's like Disney, where it's like they have like 9 different avenues that it's like, you know, we're for this, against this, but
right.
this product is also for this and against this. It's like that. It's like you have a Coke that's made with pure sugar. You have Coca-Cola Classic. You got Diet Coke for those old heads who think, you know, Coke is with zero calories is good. And then you have like Coke Zero, which is like, you know, zero sugar. It's like, so they have everything. But like even the zero sugar, isn't that still like bad for you? Because the stuff that they... The sweeteners are still
yes,
just yeah. as bad for you, are they not?
Sometimes it's even worse.
Yeah.
yeah.
Because the sweeteners like stevia.
Yeah, stevia. Yeah.
stevia
yeah.
You have no sugar in that.
Yeah.
But the amount of insulin that you have to release to get the energy or the glucose inside your cell, it's even higher.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's better for you to take sugar instead of sweetener.
Yeah.
The problem I think I see is the balance. Again, I like pasta. I'm married with an Italian wife. So I love pasta. I love cheese. I like Coca-Cola. But the balance, how you eat and drink, I think is the key.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way for us to get rid of Coca-Cola anymore or pasta or even Kellogg's. You're going to face some time, oh, I'm late. I woke up late. I don't have time to get my breakfast. I will eat cereal.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. The problem is you are doing this every single day in a row.
Mm-hmm.
That is the problem. But if you have a balance between the things, it's good. I used to say that you want to eat and drink healthier, do what your grand-grandmother told you in the past.
Yeah.
Put a lot of color in your plate.
Right.
You will be fine. If you want to skip one meal, you will be fine. If you want to eat trash food once in a week, for example,
right,
come on, you will be fine. But doing that in a breakfast, lunch, dinner, every single day, you will be in trouble.
Yep. All right. Well, on that ominous note, but no, we have
topics to keep talking the entire night here.
Oh, yes. But I think at this point, we're going to wrap things up. And so thank you, Myron. This has been enlightening. And thank you to our audience for listening to the Career Pathways podcast. So we'll do a quick sign off. Jason.
Producer Jason, signing off.
Producer Cheyenne, signing off.
Wait. Jason, I forgot to ask. Where can you find the Career Pathways podcast?
We're like Coca-Cola. We're never going away. you can find us on 99.97% of platforms, the same number of germs that get killed by Germix.
There you go. And Myron, again, thank you. This has been wonderful.
Thank
you all. Please listen to us. Subscribe if you haven't. On YouTube or anywhere you get a podcast. And we hope you join us next week. Take care.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Lyon College and by Kilt Studios.